It's now time for Just the Terror with Nick Guerra. In plain sight. This was about 7 years ago or so in the Cerritos area. My friend and I were driving home from a concert. We drove by a local elementary school. All of us joking, laughing, whatever 16-year-olds do. My friend's girlfriend looked over at the playground in the school. She screamed and then refused to talk to anyone for a few hours. We all asked her what was wrong, what she saw, what happened. But nothing would make her tell us. All we knew was that she was seriously spooked. As a backstory, I should add that she's sensitive to paranormal happenings. She would have doors fly open at her house, clothes hangers fly off the rail, cups fall over and then right themselves multiple times. She eventually told her boyfriend what she had seen. She said that she had briefly seen a bunch of blood-covered people walking around the playground aimlessly. I immediately started blaming exhaustion. It was around 2 a.m. when we drove by, but we looked up the school's history later. It turns out in the late 80s, a plane had crashed into the school. Lots of people died. Something truly sinister. I should start off by saying my brother is not only a military man, but he's your basic hetero, never let them see you cry cliche of a military man. He's not afraid of anything. Well, except for the entire country of Japan. This is his story. My brother joined the Marines when he was 18. He was stationed in Japan. He really enjoyed his time there for a while. The girls, specifically. He made friends with some of the Japanese guys his age who worked around the base. On nights where him and his soldier friends had the night off, the local Japanese guys would show them around, bring them to bars, introduce them to girls, etc. One night after a little drinking and no luck with girls, one of the guys invited my brother home to play video games. My brother accepted the invite. They played video games for a few hours. During this time, he tells my brother the main reason he wanted to get home early was because his little sister had been suffering from night terrors. She had started waking up screaming, crying, and sometimes vomiting. The guy was worried about her and wanted to be home in case she had an episode. This guy's family was built in the shape of a horseshoe with a garden in the middle. His bedroom window faced his sister's bedroom window on the other side of the house. As my brother and the guy began to call it a night, the guy walks over to the window to look across the garden into his sister's window to check on her. He lifts the blind, peers out for a fraction of a second, and jumps back screaming. My brother then goes to look out the window. The guy stops him and tells my brother that he saw a dark cloud with red eyes hovering over his sister's sleeping body. My brother naturally does not believe him and decides to look for himself. He creeps quietly over to the window and lifts the blinds. But this time, he finds himself eye to eye with what he describes as a dark black puff of smoke with a face. My brother and the guy jump under the guy's bed's covers and stay there until it was light outside. They peeked from the blankets once, only to see that the smoky figure was in the room with them. I don't know what to believe. Maybe they drank more than what they said and imagined it all, but I know my brother believes what he saw. He sticks to his story. When he tells it, he looks like someone who saw something truly sinister. Two uncrossed paths. This happened when I was 21 or 22. My mother and I like going for walks together, even if the weather isn't entirely the best. One autumn evening, about 4 or 5 years ago, we decided to go for a walk. There was a local walking path in the Minnesota woods near our home. It was cloudy, a bit late in the evening, a little windy, and just spitting rain, but we went anyway. As we walked, and we walked a decent speed since it was quite chilly, we noticed no one else was on the path. We guessed that was just due to the weather, and that was fine. The sun was also going down, and Minnesota is full of black bears. We came up on a side path with a pretty bridge to the side. I wanted to go take some photos of us together on it, but my mother said she had a bad feeling deep in the pit of her stomach. There could be a bear that way. We should stay on the main path. I convinced her anyway. We went and took a few pictures together, then got back onto the main path. We laughed about her bad feeling and brushed it aside. When we got back on the main path, we noticed a man dressed all in black quite a ways up the main path from us. His back was to us, so he was walking in the same direction we were, down the path. We hadn't seen him behind us at all prior to this, and he was walking fairly slowly. After a while, I noticed a break in the trees off of the main path, one less marked and not meant for locals to go on. I knew if we followed it, we would be on a high hill overlooking the river that ran by the path. Again, I wanted to go, and again, my mother's good mood was soured by a bad feeling. We went despite the terrible feeling she had. I had at one point as well, but only a small nagging in the pit of my stomach. I suppose it was nerves, maybe brought on by my mother being so nervous herself. We walked up a ways until the trees cleared out. It was a beautiful view. At this point, the nagging in my stomach got much worse, and I too immediately thought, there's a bear here, we're being watched. I scanned the woods around us, and a small movement caught my eye. A man in a blue jacket was standing just behind the tree line staring at us. I said to my mom, look, there's someone there, and pointed at him. The man immediately took off like a flash of lightning, running in a direction that would take him deeper into the woods, not back onto the path. My mom turned around to see him as I pointed, following his movement with my finger. She didn't see him too much, but we both agreed at once that it was time to turn back and go home. We hurried back down toward the main path, but when we made it to the very edge of the trees and the main path, it was blocked by the man dressed in black who had been ahead of us before we went that direction. He had just stepped off the main path and was about to head to the same clearing where we had been standing. When he saw us coming, he turned around on a dime, so fast I didn't even notice his face, and started walking hurriedly back in the same direction he'd been before. We ran out of the path, got into the car, drove to the other end of the path, where the man in black would be exiting. We saw him coming, but when he saw the car, he turned again and started walking the other direction. We went back to the other side and waited, but he never showed up. To this day, I think those two men were conspiring, and that if we had stayed even a moment longer, we may have ended up in that river. Dead. I thank my gut feeling and always listen when it begins to nod my insides in warning, and I suggest everyone else does too. House in the Philippines. My friend is a military man, and his family owns a house in a rural area in the Philippines. I believe it was some sort of family inheritance. The area around the house had been subject to treasure hunters looking for Yamashita's gold. They decided to put a stop to the digging by going there themselves to address the issue and also have a vacation at the same time. Their whole family went, from his dad, who is also from the military, to his mom and two sisters. When they got there, their neighbors advised them to make sure that they get inside their house by 5 p.m. without offering any explanation. They found that piece of advice quite odd, but they did so anyway, in case it had something to do with the local wildlife. They stayed in their respective rooms that night, but they didn't get much rest because of the strange things that they saw. My friend was getting ready for bed when he noticed that outside the window, across the field, near the neighbor's property, there was a big dog-like creature. He went to the window to get a better look, and he saw this beast was beside the neighbor's Volkswagen Beetle. What took him aback was that this dog was as big as the car. Then something else caught his eye. A large head sticking out above a line of coconut trees being illuminated by the moonlight, staring right at him. Possibly a capper. In the Philippine folklore, the capper is a creature that could be characterized as a tree giant. He quickly closed the windows and decided to stay in bed, not knowing if he was seeing things or not. That same night, his sisters had been hanging out in the dining area when they saw a curtain floating around. At first, they thought it was just the wind blowing it around, so they ignored it. After a few moments, they realized that there was no wind, with the windows all closed and nary a slight breeze. They freaked out and ran to their rooms, hiding under their sheets for the entire night. His parents weren't spared from this freak show as well. In their room was an antique closet with nothing in it. At random times during the night, it would swing open, making quite some noise, and after a while, it would slam shut. They were sleepy and tired from the day, so they just let this be, thinking it might have been the wind. The next morning, they recounted their experiences and decided that for the next night, they'll all stay in the living room together, figuring that they'll be safer that way. They wanted to stay since it was a long trip coming to this house, and it felt like a waste if they didn't maximize the visit. That night, as planned, they slept in the living room. My friend's slumber was interrupted by the sound of heavy breathing and hot air blowing in his face. He opened his eyes, and his heart skipped a beat after seeing an enormous black mass with red eyes floating above and staring straight back at him. He immediately closed his eyes and tried to grab his gun, but it was just out of reach. He tried to nudge his dad awake, who was beside him, to no avail. He finally decided to whisper to him, "Pa, there's something on top of us." His father then replied in a very annoyed yet freaked out tone, "I know, just shut your eyes and go to sleep." They immediately left at the first sign of light. Their week-long vacation reduced to 2 days. Also, it just so happens that their house is right beside a cemetery. My friend is a very straightforward guy, so coming from him, I tend to believe this story. The only thing he wonders about is not being able to attempt a shot at the floating black thing, but he says he doesn't want to repeat that again. I just asked him to refresh my memory about the story, and his hairs were on end, goosebumps everywhere. Mom's message. My mother was murdered when I was 16. About 3 or 4 months later, my aunt got a static-filled phone call one night with my mother's voice saying, "I'm okay, tell the kids I love them." About the same time, I walked into my grandparents' house one early evening. I heard my mom's voice say my name clear as day. I even knew where the voice came from. I immediately looked in the direction of the voice. It came from the corner where the phone was located. I'm not gonna lie, it scared me out of my wits. I later told my grandma about it. She said, "Your mommy didn't mean to scare you. She won't bother you anymore." An angel or not? When I was growing up, my little brother and I shared a bedroom. We were some years apart, but still young during the time of this story. My younger brother was born with a multitude of different health issues, including multiple sclerosis. He's confined to a wheelchair and cannot care for himself. That was why we shared a room, so I could keep an eye on him overnight when my parents couldn't. One night, I randomly woke up for no particular reason. I glanced over at my younger brother, but I noticed something very startling. A strange silhouette of a man wearing a top hat looking in through the window behind my brother's crib. The first thing I did was jump up and turn on the light. I ran into my parents' room to tell them what I saw. When my parents came back into the room to investigate, my brother was having a seizure in his crib. Few of my family members say the shadow man in the hat was his guardian angel standing in the window that night, but I believe it was death. Grandma's house. My grandma lives in an old house that was part of the Underground Railroad. Huge white house complete with hidden rooms. I always got a bad vibe when I was in that house. It didn't matter if I was alone or not. My grandpa had passed in the home when I was 2. That's the only death I knew about that happened in the house. My grandma wouldn't hear anything about ghosts or monsters or being scared. It's an old house. Humans are the only monsters, she would always say. Now, I have a huge family. My grandma had 10 boys and 3 girls, so I have lots of aunts and uncles. When I was 16, my grandma finally had an experience that not only freaked her out, but made her leave and sell the house to a company that tore it down. She specifically wanted it torn down. I begged her to tell me what happened. She always refused, until one night when I was about 18. She was a real small, blunt woman. She wasn't one for jokes or pranks or telling stories, so I know she told me what happened. She told me she'd always seen stuff that creeped her out, but she could always excuse it with something. Oh, it was the furnace, or this is the wind. She believed Jesus would save her from anything evil. She wasn't a super religious, like, zealot, but if she thought you needed Jesus, she'd tell you. One evening, she was in her room watching TV. She thought she heard someone walking around upstairs. One of my uncles, who we called Naked Phil, had a room upstairs he sometimes stayed in. He had a padlock on the outside so you couldn't get in his room without a key. After a little bit, the thumping gets so loud, my grandma goes up there to see what the racket is. Uncle Naked Phil's room is locked from the outside, so he couldn't have been there. There's no reason anyone would be on the inside of his room either. My grandma looked in all the other upstairs rooms. She didn't see or hear anything else. It was total silence except for her own footsteps and opening and closing of the doors. She wasn't sure what she heard before, so she kind of shrugged it off. She reasoned maybe an animal got on the roof or a mouse was in the furnace. She just sort of let it go. She goes back downstairs and starts to read. After some time passes by, she thought she heard someone crying, just a soft whisper of someone sobbing. She listened for a few minutes and it quits. When she doesn't hear it anymore, she begins to wonder if she even heard it at all. She turns on the TV for background noise while she's reading. She forgot all about it. It starts to get kind of late. My grandma figures she'd take a shower and go to bed. She turns off the TV and heads to the bathroom. She hears a clanging from upstairs. She calls my uncle's phone to see where he is just in case. He answers and tells her he's out of town. He'll be home the following morning. She ends the call and heads toward the shower. As she was rinsing her hair, she heard someone screaming loud, like they were in the bathroom with her. Not screams of someone pranking her or someone even scared. She said these screams sounded so loud, so sad, so painful. It was like someone was being tortured to death a few feet away. My grandma screams herself, grabs her towel and runs out of the house. She heads down the river to my Uncle Mike's house. She was naked and so shaken that Uncle Mike called an ambulance. Her blood pressure was in stroke range, but otherwise they said she was fine. Uncle Mike's wife, Penny, gave her some clothes to wear. My grandma told them she wasn't going back to the house. She ended up buying a house a few roads over. To this day, I sometimes wonder what was going on in that house. Maybe it was haunted or possessed. Maybe my uncle was a murderer. Who knows, but my grandma, and she passed away 2 years ago. She's always stuck by her story though, no deviation. The look in her eyes when she described the scream haunt me to this day. What if he comes back? I had just graduated from high school and wanted to do something to prove my courage, which at that time I thought I could do by doing some solo backpacking along the Appalachian Trail. I'd never done anything like that before, and I figured it was a good first step toward manhood. I arrived at the trail, tired from the long drive from my home in Indiana, and started hiking in. I'd planned out my hike and knew I could hit a backcountry site in the time that I had on my first day. I hike maybe 5 miles in and arrive at my backcountry site. It's just a couple of hundred yards from the trail. I'm doing this in late fall, so most of the plants are dead and the leaves have already given up the ghost from all the trees. I can see the trail easily, and anyone on the trail can see my campsite. I set up my tent and hang up my food bag so bears can't get to it, and I'm trying to make my fire. Everything was damp and I was having trouble, so I was concentrating intently and didn't notice the man standing 3 feet from me until he cleared his throat. Startled, I knocked over my puny stick pyramid and nearly peed myself. I regained my composure and chuckled at myself, half expecting the man to apologize and join in my relieved laughter. But he doesn't. I stop my laughter short as I take a look at the guy. He's dressed like most hikers, campers, North Face, boots, etc. I say hi. He stares at me for just the briefest of moments longer and then says hello back. I would describe the man, but he looks like an average guy. Imagine an average guy and you've got an idea of what this man looks like. The only thing that set this man apart was his stare. It was penetrating and appraising. I ask how his hike is going and stumble my way through some small talk, trying to shake the prey feeling that has come over me. The man doesn't say much, but he sits down on a log near my tent like he's going to stay for a while. I put my hand in my pocket and feel the small camp knife I brought along with me. The sun is getting low and falls quickly in the woods. Still, this man doesn't make any sign that he plans on leaving anytime soon. We talk a little bit about it being my first camping trip, and he seemed impressed that I chose to do it alone. Or maybe not impressed, but he seemed to take special interest in me being alone. Again, his gaze was appraising. At this point, I nonchalantly take the knife out of my pocket and begin to whittle a stick. I can tell he notices the knife. I begin to ask him probing questions like, "So, are you camping around here? And you here alone?" I realize that he doesn't have a pack, a big backpacking pack, nor a day bag on him. I know from my map that we're at least another several miles from another campsite and that we're around 5 miles from the trailhead. He wasn't going to get out of the woods before nightfall, and unless it was in his pocket, he didn't even have a headlamp or flashlight. Quite suddenly he stands. I quickly get to my feet, knife held near my knee, low but ready. He says he has to go, and with that turns and walks away. He heads down the trail in the direction of the trailhead. It's almost true night. I wonder where he was heading and how he would get there in the dark. I watched him until he reached a bend in the trail and moved out of sight. Another few minutes, I kept my eye on the trail and the woods around me, half expecting to see him sneaking up on me. I redoubled my effort to start a fire, but reluctantly abandoned my efforts. All I brought was a lighter and some matches. It was my first time, forgive me, and everything was so damp and the ground was muddy. By the time I look up from my fire, it was night. I crawl into my tent and replay the strange encounter. The more I think about it, the more I realize how out of place the man was and how uneasy he made me feel. Then it hit me. What if he comes back? I decide I would move my campsite. With just the light from my headlamp, I pack up my stuff, retrieve my food bag, and hike another hour down the trail. It began to rain. There was no other actual campsites, so I just hiked off the trail a ways and then set up my tent, hung my food bag, and went to sleep, dreaming of bears with the face of that strange man. Early the next morning, I awoke alive and well. I packed up my site and realized I had forgotten my water bottle at my previous site. so I hiked back. I arrived at my old site, and my breath was sucked from my lungs. Boot prints in the mud led from the trail to my campsite and circled the area. He had come back in the night. Don't take work home. My grandpa worked as the gardener in the biggest cemetery in my state for about 16 years. One day as he was working, he saw a pile of things that were about to be thrown out. And in the pile were two really ornate flower vases that looked really expensive. They were intact, save for a few chips. Growing up in a poor village in Europe, he hated seeing people throw usable things away, so he decided to take them home. He left them out in the garden overnight. The next day was his day off, so he spent it working out in the garden and tending to the animals, chickens and ducks. He says that around midday, he looked down at his hands and noticed that they were covered in blood that looked like it was coming from between his fingers. He assumed that he hurt himself without noticing, even though it was a lot of blood and there's no evidence of blood on the tools he was using. He's one of those old men that drinks coffee at the same heat as fresh as lava and has been set on fire twice while he was in the army, so he didn't think too much of not noticing that he was bleeding a lot. So he went to go and wash it off, but the blood wouldn't scrub off, no matter what he did. He also says that this is when he noticed that the blood wasn't dried, rather he was still bleeding. Worried, he showed my grandma, who's extremely superstitious and was a nun for a good 5 or so years, who promptly lost her senses when she noticed the vases he'd brought home from work. She berated him into taking them back to work, which he did that afternoon. He says that the next time he looked at his hands, there was no trace of blood on them at all. Seeking power. This is my friend's creepy gin story. During Occupy Wall Street in New York City, there was this character that started to make a name for himself. I won't mention his name, but it was obviously one he had made up. It sounded like the kind of name someone in the Game of Thrones would have. This guy put himself out as this guru type. His plan was to head up a delegation of a few people to establish a food supply chain from a farm upstate to the protesters in the park. I don't know what became of him, but I believe he led 9 men upstate. Fast forward about a year or two, my friend who had encountered this weird character at Occupy Wall Street goes over to Jordan. While he's in Jordan, my friend is hosted by a rich man who claims to be able to speak with jinn. Unprompted, the rich man identifies the weird named character by name and tells my friend that he is a jinn seeking power in the world. I'm not from an Islamic background myself, but I've always wondered how my friend's experience matches up to established jinn lore. Told you so. A weird tale my mom shared with me a few days ago. Coming from a religious background, my mom was never really scared of anything like ghosts or supernatural entities, because there was always a somewhat plausible explanation for everything. Most of the time, any weird sightings or unexplainable events were ruled off as jinn or just something related to that of Islamic lore. But last week, my mom shared a story with me that even seemed to spook her while telling it. Here's the story and how she told it. Back in the early days of 2002, I would always leave my job at Tim Hortons at around 4:30 in the morning. Take note, this took place in December. It was extremely difficult to see at night, since the snow would cover up any small details on the road. We lived in Brampton back in the day. I was told never to take the Mayfield and Bromella route. I would always take the Bouvier route as a formality. On this particular morning, I was running late for work. Of course, it had to be on my night shift. I had to find a way to improvise and get to work a bit early. The only thing I could think of was take the Mayfield and Bromelia route, which was the route that everyone had said not to take. However, tonight I thought I could make an exception as my perfect attendance record had yet to be broken. I never understood why the adults had told me time and time again to steer clear of this particular route. At the time, I thought maybe that it had something to do with it not being very civilized, since it was a small road that was engulfed in the trees that surrounded it. Either way, I decided to take this route on this specific day as I thought, what's the worst that could happen? And boy, did I underestimate what could happen. A few minutes in, at the part of the road that was completely surrounded by trees, bushes, and the like, my car, a small golden Toyota Prius, sunk a little into the road. I could see water splashing up against the windows outside. It felt as if I had driven through a 2 feet deep puddle, but at the time, my main focus was just getting to work as fast as possible. When I got to the parking lot at which the Tim Hortons was located next to, I stepped out to open the front door, but stopped as I glanced at my car before going in. Blood. Lots of it, in fact. I could see it clearly as the bright gold color of the car had been bleached by the snow, making any darker liquid clearly visible. Now you might be thinking, oh, it's just probably water that washed away some of the frost that was built up. Well, how do you explain the crimson colored liquid sprayed across the windshield and windows? The tires, too. The car was completely submerged in it, from the tires all the way up to the bottom of the windshield. This means that the puddle that I had driven through was at least a meter or 3 feet deep. I went to the Tim Hortons and called my supervisor outside, who took a look at the car. The first thing he asked me after looking was, which route did you take? Why would that matter? After telling him I took the Mayfield route, he immediately seemed less suspicious, almost to the point at which it was completely normal for this to have happened on that route. He explained to me that the reason the route was so heavily avoided was that it was heavily connected to that of spirituality, or as some people would say, haunted. After my shift ended at around 11:30 a.m., my supervisor asked me to take him to the exact spot at which I had driven through the blood. Without hesitation, I did, and strangely enough, the blood puddle was nowhere to be seen. All of my elders back at home were visibly angry that I had taken that route, and my mother-in-law in particular calmly reminded me to never drive through that road, as I had finally seen firsthand what she meant. Something fishy. For the story's sake, my name is Craig, and any persons mentioned in the story have had their names changed. I had a girlfriend about 11 to 12 years ago, now my wife. The Celtics had just beat the Lakers in the NBA Finals. To celebrate, I decided to rent a cabin for a weekend with my then girlfriend, Anna, and another couple we were friends with, Bill and Samantha. We got there early on a Friday and did some fishing. After about 2 to 3 hours, Bill and I caught a fish, a mackerel. We cleaned it, cooked it, and everybody ate some while getting extremely drunk. Everything was normal. We went to bed. The next morning, Anna said to me that she was having pains in her stomach. Nothing too bad, but she just stayed in bed. Samantha watched over her while Bill and I went for a hike. We smoked some pot and headed back to the girls after about an hour and a half of stoned wandering. We got back. Anna felt better. The day progressed no different than the day before. That night, we were drunk again. Bill and Samantha went to their room, Anna and I to ours. We started to have sex. After a while, she asked if I wanted to put her in her butt, and I did. Everything's going fine. We're both loving it. When all of a sudden, I feel a sharp and excruciating pain in my penis. I immediately pulled out and started screaming as I realized blood was squirting out of the tip of my penis. Bill and Samantha burst through the doors to make sure everything's okay. I calmed down enough to inspect it and noticed something long and white sticking out of my urethra. Long story short, my girlfriend had swallowed a fishbone while drunk, which was probably making her feel sick as it passed through her intestines. And while I was having sex with her, it got lodged in my urethra. I had to go to the hospital. I peed red for a week and a half after. I'm no longer a Celtics fan. Piano skills. When I was in the 8th grade, I went on a school trip that was called the Louisiana Tour. It was mostly going around to significant sites in southern Louisiana. One of the places we went was Myrtle's Plantation, which is considered to be one of the most haunted places in the country. There are all kinds of stories about this place, but at one point we were standing in a room as part of a larger group, and the tour guide was talking about something, I don't remember what. As I'm standing there, I start to hear what sounds like someone hitting a piano key. After I heard it a couple of times, I started to look around for the source of the noise. I didn't see a piano, but I kept hearing it. So I asked my friends who were standing near me if they heard it. They said no. When I heard it again, I said, there it is again, and that they must have heard it. They thought I was crazy. So I went back to looking around the room. Everyone's eyes were on the tour guide except for one woman. She caught my eye and pointed at me, then at her ear with a questioning look. I realized she was asking if I heard it too, and I nodded. At this point, the tour guide starts telling a story about a soldier who had died there, and that he played the piano and multiple guests had reported hearing him playing in the night. I honestly don't know what to think. I guess I still don't know. I talked to the woman as we were all leaving the room, and she had heard the exact same thing as me, but her husband and son had not heard it. Checking in. I had just finished a very long day at work. I'm a medical courier, and I am regularly on the road staying in hotels, and life is never dull. This particular evening, I wound up on a 500-mile drive that ended in Cody, Wyoming, at around midnight. It had been cold, it was December after all, and this is Wyoming. The roads had been very so-so that night. They weren't clear, but they weren't treacherous. It was one of those drives in the dark where you are on edge the whole time. Staying alert for 500 miles in the dark, on roads that were nearly abandoned at this time of night, with light snow and heavy winds, takes a lot out of a person. This particular week, it had been very busy. I had been in 4 states that week by the time I reached Wyoming that evening. The drive to the patient's house was up a windy, slick road, and the drive was uneventful. After I dropped off the medicine to them and called the boss to let him know I had made it in and was heading to a hotel to get some sleep. Pretty usual conversation. We talked briefly about how much they would reimburse me for the hotel room. They always say 80 to 100. It's pretty typical and fair, since the cheap hotel in Cody, Wyoming is about that price. I, however, am 31, and a good night's rest, a good free breakfast, and a nice AM soak in the hot tub are requirements for when I catch myself in a hotel room. I know that by the time I get to the hotel, I've put on serious miles, so I treat myself. I'll not name the chain of hotels I stay at, but I frequent one chain because it's the best value hotel in my hometown, which is back in Nebraska. Tonight I pulled into the hotel, which I have stayed at 3 or 4 times now, so I am familiar with the place. I'd called ahead about 8 hours before I was leaving Denver to call and book a room, and let them know that they would expect me at midnight. I walk into the hotel with my bag, dusting off the snow that had fallen on me while I got my stuff out of the car and walked inside. It's very quiet. There's no music, and the TV isn't on in the lobby. I wander to the counter, leaving a trail of wet shoe prints behind from coming in and out of the snow into the lobby, my shoes squeaking as I approach the counter. When I get to the counter, there's no one there. On the counter is a bowl of ice cream with a brownie from the restaurant connected to the hotel. The local paper is open to the comics page, and the Sudoku is half filled out with a pen sitting there. Hanging on the back of the chair is a small lady's coat with fake fur fringe around the hood. On the floor next to the chair are a pair of smaller pink and black Nikes and a black purse. I figure that she, by the assumption of the coat, shoes, and purse, is in the bathroom, so I stand at the counter quietly, waiting on her return. I fiddle with my wallet, getting out my card to pay for it and my ID. I scroll through on my phone and hook up to the free Wi-Fi. 5 minutes go by, then 10. At 15 minutes, the phone starts ringing. I still had no idea where she was, and I had begun to get irritated. It had been a long day, and I wanted to get rest before I got up and drove home in the morning. After the phone stopped ringing, and I started to get frustrated, I began to wander around the lobby and behind the counter shouting, "Hello, is anyone here?" as loudly as possible. The area behind the counter is an employee-only area. I venture back behind the counter where a hallway leads to the back of the house area connected to the offices, staff elevator, bathrooms, laundry, and the restaurant. I venture down the hallway shouting, "Hello." Still, no one answers. It is now 12:30 a.m. As I return to the counter and begin looking for a posted phone number for a manager or someone of authority, the phone rings, the cordless phone still laying next to the paper she had opened. Frustrated and exhausted, I answer the phone, hoping it's someone who could tell me where the woman is who's supposed to check me in. It's not. It's another guest who had tried calling earlier for a wake-up call in the morning. I explain to the gentleman on the phone my situation and how I cannot help him. He states he is coming to the lobby to help me look for the girl at the counter. I had not found a number to call. 5 minutes go by, and the strange older man with odd glasses and long, unkempt hair comes into the lobby from the first floor hallway. At this point, I had been behind the counter and had been shouting to the point I feared I may wake up other guests. I'd wandered through the back area of the lobby and the front part of the restaurant, all while shouting. No one responded. This guy gave me the creeps. I was exhausted but on high alert. There's an employee missing, and a creepy guy who just happened to appear in the same time she's missing. Feeling nervous about this gentleman, I stay prepared for any strange behavior and keep myself at least arm's distance from him the entire time. I explain where I have looked, that I have yelled. At this point, I begin to go through what I call worst-case scenario preparation. This guy could have easily overpowered a small woman. I'd be standing here with a crazy person. I keep my space and my back towards the main entry just in case. I am a grown man, just under 6 feet. I've had self-defense courses, and I have a concealed carry weapon after encountering a bear at the patient's house in the fall. I have no reason to believe I'm in the immediate trouble, but this guy just gives me the creeps. It's at this point I debate calling the cops. It's now 12:45 a.m. The gentleman tells me, maybe she's in the bathroom, which I respond to that I had thought of that myself, But I had walked by and yelled loudly when I walked through the back and no one responded. He insists we check the bathrooms. My red flag goes off and I put another foot or two of space between us as I let him lead us down the hallway to the employee bathroom. My heart and mind racing at this point. Did this dude kill her? And now he's going to try to kill me? I start to worry about my safety as we go down the hallway that leads to the small rooms with one exit in and out. We reach the bathroom. He knocks and announces himself, then opens the door. The bathroom's empty. We check a few more rooms and the elevator and find nothing. We venture back to the lobby where I stand behind the counter looking for any phone number that could be a manager or supervisor. After about 10 minutes, I find a number and someone answers. It's now 12:55 a.m. The half-asleep voice on the other end of the phone is the maintenance woman for the hotel. Confused as to who I am and why I am calling, I explain the situation as the creepy man stands on the other side of the counter staring at me in a dead, cold manner. The maintenance woman says she'll be there in 10 minutes or so. I hang up the phone. I walk around the counter, still confused, looking at her stuff there, as if she had just vanished. It's at this point I decide to wander towards the lobby seating for the restaurant. Once in the doorway, I turn the corner and down at the end of the booth, there's a pair of legs hanging out of the booth. I had walked within 15 feet of there while checking around before the creepy guy showed up. I see her legs hanging, and instantly the pit of my stomach turns sour and a sense of dread comes over me. Suddenly, the creepy guy walks right up by me. Thinking the worst, I take a few steps away from him and down the row of booths in the dark restaurant. With him at the other end, I look into the booth where she's laying. She's maybe 20 and very pretty. I shake her foot, she doesn't respond. I shake again, saying, "Hey," nothing. It's at this moment the creepy guy starts down the booth that I finally feel I may need to defend myself. I kneel down to draw from my ankle holster as he quickly comes down the row of booths, and it's that exact moment the girl wakes up and accidentally kicks me in the chest, knocking me gently on my ass and stopping Mr. Creepy in his tracks, also stopping me from drawing a weapon. She'd been asleep. Mr. Creepy was just a guess. Moments later, the maintenance woman arrived, and by 1:15, I was in my room trying to decompress. Thank you for listening to Just the Terror with Nick Guerra. Make sure to check out True Scary Stories with Edie on Tuesdays. Give it 5 stars, and stay scared, uglies.